gratitude goes out to you today for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is a locally made exploration into positive solutions to some of today's ecological challenges for all of us working to create a healthier future for our communities and for the world you live in.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. My name is Elaine McMillan. On today's show, we'll discuss the negative effects of gerrymandering with John Hickey, chair of the Missouri chapter of the Sierra Club, and Kevin Grooms of the Thomas Hart Benton KC Sierra Club Group. Stay tuned. But first, the environmental news for the week of January 6, 2020. Democracy Now! Reports, Amazon has threatened to fire workers who speak out about the online retail giant's environmental policies. Leaders of the group Amazon Employees for Climate Justice say they've received letters reprimanding them for speaking to the media without the permission of Amazon's corporate offices. New York Times reports, federal agencies would no longer have to take climate change into account when they assess the environmental impacts of highways, pipelines, and other major infrastructure projects, according to a Trump administration plan that would weaken the 50-year-old National Environmental Policy Act. Trump's plan could sharply reduce obstacles to the Keystone XL oil pipeline and other fossil fuel projects that have been stymied when courts ruled that the Trump administration did not properly consider climate change when analyzing the environmental effects of the projects. The administration plans to also narrow the range of projects that require environmental review. That could make it likely that projects will sail through the approval process without having to disclose things like discharged waste, cut trees, or increased air pollution. The new rule would no longer require agencies to consider the, quote, cumulative, end quote, consequences of new infrastructure. In recent years, courts have interpreted that requirement as a mandate to study the effects of allowing more planet-warming greenhouse gas emissions into the atmosphere. It also has meant understanding the impacts of rising sea levels and other results of climate change on a given project. The Trump administration has been aggressive in its efforts to roll back environmental regulations. Once the proposed rules are filed in the Federal Register, the public will have 60 days to comment on them. Inside Climate News reports, after years of mounting opposition to the increasing oil and gas infrastructure, 2020 is shaping up to be the year that pipeline opponents get their day in court. One case headed to the U.S. Supreme Court takes a closer look at whether parts of the Appalachian Trail are off-limits to fossil fuel infrastructure and may determine the fate of two multi-billion dollar pipelines. Another case weighs state sovereignty against pipeline interests and could have implications nationwide. The rise of hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, launched a natural gas boom that has fueled a rush of pipeline construction in recent years, with pipeline companies spending an average of $10 billion per year on expanding their pipeline network, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Even in oil and gas-rich Texas, where fossil fuel interests dominate state politics, landowners are pushing back on pipeline companies' use of eminent domain. Environ News reports, about 15% of Antarctica's surface melted on Christmas Eve 2019, breaking previous records for ice melt, according to the Global Forecast System, GFS, by the National Centers for Environmental Prediction. And now for our show.
Welcome. I'm glad you're listening to Eco Radio KC. This is Teresa Wilkie. We have with us today in the studio Kevin Grooms. He's chair of the Thomas Hart Benton Group of the Missouri Sierra Club. Hi, Kevin.
Hello.
And online, we have John Hickey. He's chair of the Missouri Sierra Club.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Good, good, good. So we are going to talk about a white paper that's been presented by the Sierra Club. And the topic is gerrymandering. And I'm not a kid anymore, listeners, and so I am well aware what gerrymandering is, but I had to take a look and see what does the dictionary say, what does Wikipedia say. So Gerrymandering is a practice intended to establish an unfair political advantage for a particular party or group by manipulating voting district boundaries, and that's most commonly used in the first-past-the-post electoral systems. So this has been going on in the United States since the 1800s. There was a gentleman named Gary. That's credit to you, John. You're a member of the camp that says gerrymandering, and I'm a gerrymandering person, and they're both acceptable. So whatever caused the Sierra Club to present this white paper?
Well, this is John. Let me take a first crack at that. What we noticed as the Missouri Sierra Club is that when Missouri voters had a chance to vote on environmental issues, Missourians support the environment. Look at the vote in November 2016 on Amendment 1, the Parks, Soils, and Water Sales Tax. 80% of Missourians voted to continue the sales tax to help support our public lands, in particular state parks, as well as soil and water conservation. So that's 80% on our side. But then, less than 7 months later, the legislature voted 58% to sell off the four new state parks that had recently been purchased. And so we saw that Missourians as a whole support state parks, but the legislators opposed these state parks. And so we looked at why would that be? Why would the legislators be so out of touch with Missouri voters? And that's where we realized that gerrymandering is a central part of that problem, that the politicians, by creating these gerrymandered district lines, get to pick their voters instead of the voters picking the politicians. And when the politicians get to pick the voters, then we see that the politicians think that they don't have to listen to the voters because they can skew the election in advance by drawing these districts.
So I made a timeline for this. In November of 18, there was an Amendment 1, Clean Missouri Proposal. And the voters, that's legislation that the Missouri voters passed. And that was looking to change political redistricting. Isn't that correct, the Clean Missouri Proposal?
Exactly. Clean Missouri was passed by voters in November 2018. 62% of Missourians who voted in favor of redistricting reform. And that was, like you say, that was November of 2018.
And so since that time, which has been a full year now, there have been five bills in either the House or the Senate of the Missouri legislature looking to change or completely roll back Clean Missouri. So the people voted for Clean Missouri, and then the legislators are voting, no, we don't want Clean Missouri. And it does. It makes a person wonder. So I wanted to go through, John, Kevin, join in if you can, these resolutions that are pending now. There's two in the Senate, three in the House. One repeals, Amendment 1 gave a nonpartisan state demographer position, created a position. And so it's been proposed by the current Missouri legislature to repeal the position, the nonpartisan position. And another resolution leaves the demographer, that's the person that draws the maps, but puts partisan fairness at the bottom of the list for the state demographer. And then there's one in the House that also repeals the demographer position. And then there's yet another that alters the criteria the demographer uses to alter voting districts. And finally, there's one in the House that repeals Amendment 1 in its entirety. So we're going to talk today about what is its entirety. And we'll take a break here in about 5 minutes. But John and Kevin, can you say what you see the entirety of Clean Missouri Amendment 1? What would that be?
It's like John said, the whole point of the amendment was to, and to fight gerrymandering, is to make it to where voters choose their politicians, not the other way around. So to have an independent demographer, which is intended to be an expert, to choose how the lines are drawn, that person is not beholden to either party or any party of that sends politicians to Jeff City. That person's independent. And there are safeguards in Clean Missouri to give each party or each of the majority and the minority politicians to sometimes maybe they can reject certain candidates for the demographer. They have a say in the process, but they aren't the main people choosing the boundaries. And so that's actually a very critical element of the Clean Missouri Amendment, to take away the independent expert and then just put it right back in the hands of the two parties. That's not what we're standing for. And Sierra Club doesn't support one party over the other. We just want to have a system where the voters are heard. And that's what I want. That's why I personally got a lot of signatures to get the Clean Missouri Amendment on the ballot back in 2018.
Sierra Club's nonpartisan,
let me follow
right,
up
John?
If I could. Mm-hmm. Kevin is exactly right. And there are hundreds of Kevins, hundreds of volunteers who collected the signatures to put Clean Missouri on the ballot in November of 2018. It takes hundreds of thousands of signatures to get this on the ballot, and even before voters get to weigh in. And the point you made about the partisan fairness principle being put down to the bottom of the list is very telling. That tells you that's what this is really about. If you look at Missouri as a whole, you look at all the voters across the state, we're split pretty evenly on how we vote. In fact, as a Sierra Club, we looked at the last 6 statewide elections. That's from 2008 through 2018. We looked at the top office that was on the ballot, generally the governor or the auditor, and we added up all the votes that the Democratic candidates got and all the votes that the Republican candidates got over 6 different elections. When you add it all together, the Democrats got a little over 51% of the vote, and Republicans got a little over 48% of the vote. And so that shows we're split pretty evenly. But over those same 6 elections, 2 out of every 3 state House seats went to Republicans. And you may think, how could that be if voters as a whole are split just about down the middle, but a little bit Democratic leaning over those 6 cycles, the state legislative seats should be split about the same, about 50-50. But it's not. It's split 2-1 in the Republicans' favor. Why? Because the maps were manipulated to frustrate the voters' will and to artificially support one particular set of politicians. And the great thing about Clean Missouri is it doesn't take that same scheme and just tilt it so the Democrats can do the same trickery. It says we need a standard of partisan fairness, and that if the state is about 50-50 in terms of statewide votes, then the state legislative seats should fall about 50-50 in terms of which parties win them. So this is not a pro-Democratic party thing we're supporting. This is not a pro-Republican party thing we're supporting. The Sierra Club is saying the map should be drawn so that they fairly reflect how Missourians vote, so that we have a state government that actually represents state residents.
I'm so glad to hear that you guys are not partisan. So you want that on the part of both parties, Republicans, Democrats, and the independents. And we're going to take a short break here. And when we come back, we're going to continue with the timeline on the question of gerrymandering and where its place is in the American democratic process. Thank you so much.
Ebony's Bones is a kitchen table conversation that explores the souls of Black folk as we decolonize and question everything that we've been told to believe. Tune in this Thursday, January 9th at 7 p.m. and have a seat at the table.
This is federal worker Cynthia Lee of the Department of Treasury Financial Management Service, and I encourage all of my federal worker friends to support KKFI 90.1 FM during the combined federal campaign. Donating a few dollars each pay period can help keep community radio on the air in Kansas City. Designate your tax-deductible donation to KKFI CFC Agency Code 21994. Thank you for supporting community radio.
Okay, we're back, and in the next 20 or 30 minutes, we're going to really kick this ball around. We've already established that gerrymandering voting districts so that parties can have their proponents in place in the legislature has been going on since the 1800s, and the mechanism that was used to check that, what made Gary famous, was that it went to the United States Supreme Court, and he was told, no, you can't change these voting districts so that you get a legislator who is on your side. And so in June of 2016, the United States Supreme Court put out a decision in consolidated cases. And the Richards Court held by a conservative majority that the courts are no longer going to weigh in on questions of gerrymandering. That means, listeners, if you note, as the Sierra Club has noted in their white paper, that you're voting for certain Missouri legislation and then your elected legislators are voting against that, or are not representing you, you can't sue and get any recourse in a court of law. Would you tell us, John, the Supreme Court decision was June of 2019. So when did you write the white paper?
The white paper came out in fall of last year. So it came out in, I think it was November of last year, of 2019. And we know that we can't depend on the U.S. Supreme Court to stand up for what's fair. It is a court that is stacked with conservatives who we cannot count on standing up for fairness and the rule of law. So that is why so many volunteers like Kevin and Grooms went out and collected signatures to put the issue of fair redistricting onto the statewide ballot. And not surprisingly, Missouri voters got it. The U.S. Supreme Court may not get it, but Missouri voters got it. And Missouri voters voted 62% to 38% to reform our process of how we draw lines. And that is a small d democracy. That is a situation where Missourians decided, hey, we want to fix this problem. We're not going to wait for the courts. We're not going to wait for Congress. We're not going to wait for somebody to ride in on a shining horse. We're going to roll up our sleeves. We're going to collect all these signatures. We're going to put it on the ballot, and we will give all Missourians a chance to vote.
And that's because Amendment 1. You're referring to Amendment 1. Yeah. You're referring to Amendment 1.
Exactly.
Yes.
Amendment 1, which is on that the ballot statewide in November of 2018.
Right, the Clean Missouri. I was confused at first because when I think clean, I'm an environmentalist. And so I'm thinking, oh, clean Missouri, you know, get the pollution out of Missouri. But clean Missouri is talking about having a clean democratic process so that the people are able to vote for representatives who will vote according to what the people, the majority of the people in that district would like to have as law in Missouri.
In fact, to that point, one of the most attractive things about Clean Missouri when I was learning about the whole amendment as I was getting the signatures is that it encourages competitiveness. It makes it to where an election in a particular district is not a foregone conclusion. So this small D democracy that John referred to is something that's been missing for so long. We don't even fully understand the implications of it, but now I do, now that I support this this reform. If you have a competitive election where it's not a foregone conclusion, then the parties don't have as much a say in what that elected leader is going to be doing at Jeff City. That person also has to listen to their constituents. Whereas now, I as a Sierra Club volunteer and a leader, you know, I'm on the phones every single legislative session to say, please don't pass this bill or please support this legislation. And I do it knowing that much of the time they aren't going to be listening to me. That's frustrating. So this reform we passed in 2018 is actually critical, and we have to defend it this year. It's very important that we keep it in place.
Certainly, if you don't have the strength of saying to your legislator that support this bill because the majority of people in your voting district are for this bill, if you have a legislator who's indifferent to what the majority would like to see as
then
law,
it's broken.
Then you would almost have to pay them money, mm-hmm. or have some kind of incentive to get their vote. One thing might lead to another, and Sierra Club, I'm sure, cannot afford to buy votes.
Oh,
I'm joking.
Absolutely not.
Here, yeah.
Well, we can't even support certain candidates in elections the way that other interests can. And John has actually looked into that information specifically in the last few years.
Do you want to talk about that, John?
Well, I think when you look at campaign finance, the big businesses can put unlimited amount of money into campaigns in Missouri. And the reality is polluters will often find it's cheaper to spend money to buy politicians than it is to spend money to clean up air and water pollution. And so politicians find if they go to these polluters and say, hey, you give us a little bit of money and we'll let you off the hook, they find a ready audience of polluters who will gladly give them the money. And that means that corrupt politicians have the money to campaign in a way that regular grassroots organizations like the Sierra Club do not. But that is, of course, not the kind of state any of us want to live in. And that is why 62% of Missourians voted for Clean Missouri in November 2018. And I know a number of legislators are saying, well, voters don't get it. They're too dumb. They didn't even know what they were voting on, so we are going to change it. And I guess anybody who's listening out there in radio land, if you think you're too dumb to vote, then you should agree with those politicians. If, on the other hand, you think that you actually know something and that you are a voter who can be trusted with the vote and wants to be a real citizen, then you should stand with the Sierra Club and say, respect our vote. I am not a knucklehead. I voted. I knew what I was voting for. I don't need a politician to tell me I'm too dumb to vote. Because think about it. We also voted those politicians in. If those politicians say we're too dumb to vote up or down on Clean Missouri, what does that make them? We voted for them, too. So maybe they shouldn't be there either.
And I like the point that this is not just a cities versus rural areas issue either. The 62% is statewide. Every single one of the Missouri Senate districts approved Clean Missouri.
Listeners, we're listening east to west in the state of Missouri. John Hickey is chair of the Missouri Sierra Club. He's in St. Louis. And Kevin Grooms is chair of the Thomas Hart Benton Sierra Group in Kansas City, Missouri. So this is the entire Missouri Sierra Club that we have online with us today. And thank you for explaining to us. Now, of particular importance to you all, this partisanship of reconfiguring voting districts is because the people of Missouri have passed legislation that protects the environment. John, can you say a few words about what some of those laws are? I'm from Kansas, so I'm not going to pretend to know what laws you've passed. Prop C is one I have. And
That's a great example. People may remember that there's a Proposition C that was passed back in 2008, was on the statewide ballot, and Proposition C called for our electric utilities to move away from dirty coal to generate electricity to clean sources like wind and solar. That measure passed overwhelmingly as well. It got 66% of the vote, actually. And after it was passed, the legislature turned around and weakened it by amending it. And then when the United Nations Paris Climate Accord came together, once again, our legislature voted against adhering to the greenhouse gas pollution limits of the Paris Accord. So once again, we see Missouri voters voting 2-1 in favor of moving to clean energy, because Missourians we're not dumb, whatever the politicians may think. And we understand science. We understand that the majority of climate scientists in this country believe that human activity is causing climate change via greenhouse gas pollution. So Missourians get it. Voters voted 2-1 to move to clean energy, and now we have a legislature who instead is doing the bidding of the dirty energy industry. And I'm sure the dirty energy industry is paying off those politicians handsomely for their support, but that's not what those politicians should be doing. They should be following our vote, and our vote on clean energy was clear, and that is one more example of why we need to have redistricting reform. We need to have fair districts so that voters choose the politicians and politicians don't choose the voters.
Right. The idea of renewable energy standards is a natural for Missouri. It's a beautiful state, lots of natural resources, and smart people there who value the state and are interested in keeping it as beautiful as it is. On the other hand, there's people in Missouri who are interested in trying to find oil in Missouri. And so something like Prop C, a renewable energy for electricity, would be not as popular with those types of individuals. Now then,
you're right that the people who make money off of coal and gas like it, but in Missouri today, wind and solar are cheaper than electricity made from burning coal. So not only is moving to clean energy good for addressing climate change, it's also cheaper for utility bill payers, and it improves the public health by taking pollution out of the air. And so I think that's why 66% of Missourians voted for Proposition C back in 2008 for those very reasons.
Well, can Missouri make enough wind energy? As I said, I'm from Kansas. We have a lot of wind. What's the prospect of creating electricity from wind in Missouri? Is it good?
Yeah, there's if you go north from Kansas City up to DeKalb County and Gentry County and in northwest Missouri, there's a lot of wind farms up already. In fact, there's a city in northwest Missouri called Rockport that is today running 100% on wind energy.
Wow.
So Missouri doesn't have quite the same energy resources as Kansas. Kansas has more wind potential than Missouri. But at the same time, the technology of wind turbines is getting better and better. And so it takes less high-quality wind than it used to effectively generate wind electricity. And so if you look at a graph showing the price of producing a kilowatt hour of electricity from wind, that cost is going down, down, down every year because of those technological improvements. And that is why you're seeing more wind being developed today in Missouri.
And I'll tell you, Missouri has a lot of water, too. And that would be very interesting to see about capturing that water energy to create electricity. We have little water in Kansas, but we do have an electric power plant connected on the Kansas River, and Missouri's got the Missouri River running straight through it, so that would be remarkable.
Yeah, there's several dams on the Missouri River that generate electricity, although, you know, at the end of the day, there's a downside to hydropower as well in terms of the ecology of the rivers, and so that's why we advocate wind and solar as opposed to building any more dams in our state.
So we're going to take another break, and when we come back, listeners, we're going to wrap this up with some ideas of what we can all, given this dilemma, of what we can all do about it. Thanks so much.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Visitors to Washington's Olympic Mountain stand in awe of glaciers that have carved the landscape. But what tourists see today is different from 100 years ago. Back then, Blue Glacier descended from Mount Olympus like an icy hand reaching out over the rock. Now that hand has retreated up the mountain. Nearby, at what was once Lillian Glacier, only snow patches remain.
It kind of reminds me of a birthday cake. You have this gorgeous birthday cake, and then 2 days later, it's just crumbs.
That's Andrew Fountain of Portland State University. Using glacier maps and historical photos, he estimates that the glaciers of the Olympic Mountains have shrunk by about 75% since 1900. Early in the century, much of the melting could be attributed to natural causes. But Fountain says now carbon pollution is warming the climate, and that's accelerating the glacier's retreat.
From 1981 to 2015, they shrunk about 40%.
He says without climate action, their future looks grim. By the end of this century, he expects the glaciers of the Olympic Mountains will be gone.
Maybe a few ice patches left in little nooks and crannies, but as far as we can see, they'll vanish.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Every Tuesday from 6 to 6:30 p.m., Radioactive Magazine, a locally produced public affairs program, spotlights individuals and organizations in our community that deal with ideas and issues of social and political significance, such as climate change, racial and gender inequality, pay inequity, and much, much more. That's Radioactive Magazine, Tuesdays, 6 to 6:30 p.m., right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome back. My name is Teresa Wilkie, and I'm talking to John Hickey. He's chair of the Missouri chapter of the Sierra Club. And Kevin Grooms is in our studio. He is chair of the Thomas Hart Benton Group of the Missouri Sierra Club. They're discussing with us a white paper that they published at the end of 2019 that is in opposition to gerrymandering, which is a habit of legislators to reconfigure voting districts so that legislators from those voting districts are more likely to vote for one type of bill than another. The Sierra Club has found that the type of bill that has been predominantly effective there has been environmental bills, bills that are in the Kansas legislature and that are protecting the environment in the state of Missouri. Isn't that right, John?
Yeah, we feel that, that if you want to have a clean environment, you need to have true democracy. You need to have a system where your vote matters, and how you vote for lawmakers gives you the sort of legislature that you've that the majority of people want. And that is why protecting clean Missouri is so important. And this is not a partisan issue. The rules would make it such that if the Democrats got overwhelming control of the maps, Democrats couldn't draw bogus maps that artificially gave them more seats. This is not a Democratic or Republican issue. This is a question of whether the voters are in charge or the politicians are in charge.
So what we see is that currently in the Missouri legislature, there are resolutions to allow reconfiguring voting districts as opposed to what the voters voted for, Amendment 1, the Clean Missouri Amendment. And have you got any thoughts about what people can do, people like us who vote? What can we do about the state of affairs? As I started saying, this isn't as old as the United States, this business of manipulating districts. And thank goodness we're not passing votes by having everybody in Missouri present in the state house to take a vote and have to count all of those. So you have an elected official, and this business of manipulating the elected officials has been going on for a long time. John, share your point of view about what voters can do about this.
Well, the Missouri legislature convened Wednesday of this week, Wednesday, January 8th. They'll meet for until the middle of May. And so what I encourage everybody in Radio Land to do that hears this show is contact your state representative and your state senator and tell him or her you want them to respect the vote of the people. And if we could get all the legislators in Kansas City, Democratic and Republican, to do the right thing, that would be a big step forward in preserving the Clean Missouri Initiative. So that would be the first thing I'd say. Contact your own state rep and state senator. Secondly, I would say reach out to your fellow Missourians and become part of an organization so that you're not fighting that fight alone as just one person, but you're doing it on a larger team. I, of course, would encourage you to join the Sierra Club, and you can find out how to do that if you just Google Missouri Sierra Club, and you'll get to our website, and you can sign up for our emails, and you can join up as a member. You can also see on that website when is the next Sierra Club meeting in Kansas City, and you get to meet other people who agree with you, and you get to meet Kevin Grooms in person. So that's another opportunity. So those would be the two things I'd say. Talk to your own elected officials, but don't stop there. Politics is a team sport. As one person, you're a lone voice. Get active with a group. And again, Sierra Club is just one. The League of Women Voters is very active on this issue. And the League of Women Voters supports redistricting reform in Clean Missouri. There's other groups as well. So we reach out to your friends and neighbors, become part of an organization, and get involved. Because if we can beat this effort, we only got to beat it for the next 4.5 months, and then the legislature's done, and we can preserve the vote that we made a year ago.
I want to echo John's sense of urgency. This is my third year on the executive committee for the Thomas Hart Benton Group, and I am very active in the lobbying efforts that we make in Jeff City every year. It's a short session for 5 months, but they do a lot of work, and we have to pay attention from start to finish. And we're actually going to be forming, some of us volunteers will be participating in an actual like committee work that promote democracy on behalf of the Sierra Club. So I would welcome anyone to come to one of our meetings, introduce themselves to myself. Definitely. Thanks, John. Very important that you meet me in person, everybody.
That's your best prompt to give your website, Kevin.
That's right. So follow us on Facebook, actually, is the best way to do it. You can find us at THB Sierra Club for the Thomas Hart Benton Group in particular. And we post events there. We let people know when our meetings are. You can contact. I also answer any contact direct messages through the Facebook page. So that's at THB Sierra Club.
Right. You've done a great job this last year. You had that green bill, the Green New Deal. Mm-hmm. The Sierra Club, Thomas Hart Benton Group, was responsible for that.
We did some events with the Sunrise Movement that's also that's very much active in promoting a Green New Deal.
It's so good. Now then, I thought of yet a third thing that voters can do, and that is to attend candidate forums. So everybody in the room knows in November we're coming up to another election. And when they have candidate forums, whether it be League of Women Voters or Sierra Club or the Public Library, voters, you need to attend those voter forums, get the names of some of these bills, for example, Prop C, the Amendment 1 to the Park Soil and Water Sales Tax, the resolutions that we were talking about that are currently in front of the Missouri legislature are Joint Resolution Senate 23 and 29, House Joint Resolution 46, 47, and 57. Those are the ones that would negatively affect Clean Missouri. So ask people who are running for office, what's your position on this? And then the people will know how to vote. Be specific in your questions about how they feel about protecting the environment. That way, could you guys imagine we could have everybody in the Missouri legislature would be an environmentalist?
That would be a dream, yes. And honestly, I'm grateful for the voices that we do have in the state house right now, and including future candidates who are running for state office. There are some really strong voices for climate action. And so they, even though they're already sort of in our court, they need to hear more from more people how critical it is. They need to understand that that's one of the most critical fights that they have when they get there, because they're going to have a lot of energy from the constituents, some support from us in order to take on some of these fights, which are very difficult because of how strong the oil and gas lobby is in the state house.
And the coal mining. Sierra Club has a No More Coal national initiative. Isn't that true, John? Beyond Coal. You want to say a few words to our listeners about?
Sure. Right now, in the state of Missouri, the dominant way we generate electricity is through burning coal. And that has several major problems. One is particulate pollution from coal plants causes asthma, strokes, and heart attacks. So every single coal plant in this state is killing dozens and dozens of Missourians every year through air pollution. And that is wrong. We shouldn't be killing our own citizens by continuing with this outmoded technology. But in addition to that near-term health impact, you've got the long-term health impact of climate change. And as you look at what that means, climate change means hotter heat waves, which means more heat stroke and more people dying from excess heat. You'll see more flooding, which will also hurt the economy as well as cause more drowning deaths and other other health impacts. It means more vector-borne illnesses, more illnesses borne by ticks and by mosquitoes. That means more West Nile virus, et cetera. So as you look at the long term of what climate change can mean, it will be very upsetting to our current standard of living. And so those
it'll
are the
really
twin sides of coal we've got to deal with is the air pollution impact and the greenhouse gas pollution impact. But there's even a third, which is once you burn coal for electricity, you end up with what's called coal ash, which is what's left at the bottom of the fire, so to speak. And right now, that coal ash is being dumped in ponds and landfills across the state of Missouri. That coal ash is full of toxic heavy metals like mercury, like cadmium, like arsenic, that is polluting our groundwater. So that's a third way that we Missourians are being negatively impacted by coal. And the good thing is we have a solution, because as I said, today in Missouri, wind energy is cheaper than coal-based electricity. Solar power is cheaper than coal-based electricity. So there is no excuse for us to continue to be burning coal. It is not good for our economy. Not a single piece of coal burned in Missouri for electricity is mined in Missouri. 97% of the coal burned in Missouri comes from Wyoming. So we are strip mining Wyoming to burn the coal here in Missouri. So those are some of the reasons, and that's why I'd encourage people in radio land who are hearing this who agree on the need to address climate change, don't try and stop climate change by yourself. You need to be on a bigger team, and that is why I say do what Kevin Groom said. Follow the local Sierra Club there in Kansas City on Facebook. Know what the group is doing. Attend the group and get active, because your participation makes a difference. We are a big state, but we're not so big that a committed core of activists can't make a difference. And I think if you look at Kansas City right now, there is many opportunities to make a difference, from electric vehicles to improving building energy efficiency to promoting wind and solar. There's a lot of things you can do right there in Kansas City, but you'll really only be successful if we can make sure that our elections are free and fair, and that's why we see protecting clean Missouri is central to everything we're doing.
That was beautifully said, John. I want to thank you for being on Eco Radio KC. Kevin, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm sure that, John, you keep referring to people in radio land. We're talking to you, people in Missouri, because this problem is in Missouri and we can change it. So thank you both for coming on.
Thanks for having us. I appreciate the time. Mm-hmm.
One thing I'm going to add, this is Dave Benefreeling, engineer for the show. A useful tool for investigating gerrymandering for yourself if you want to see how it really works is 538. 538 is a website, 538.com, spelled out with all those words. And the Atlas of Redistricting is really fun. You can see how changing the borders would change if you worked it out different ways based on different factors. So it's a great way to learn about gerrymandering in your local area. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Did you know your business or organization could be sponsoring this episode of Eco Radio KC? Learn more at kkfi.org/marketing.
Here's the calendar of events for the week of January 6, 2020. Tuesday, January 7th, Extinction Rebellion KC Chapter Meeting, 6:30 p.m., St. Mark Hope and Peace Lutheran, 38th and Troost in KCMO. Meeting entrance is on Mannheim side of the church. New members welcome. Wednesday, January 8th, Nature Tots, Animal Ambassadors, 10 a.m., Baker Wetlands, 1365 West 1250 Road, Lawrence, Kansas. Kids ages 0 to 5 are invited to the Nature Tots program on January 8 and 9. This program is free to the public, but registration is required. Register online or call Morgan at 785-594-4703. Please choose one day to attend. Wednesday, January 8th, from 5 to 8:30 p.m., there will be a Wyandotte County Legislative Delegation Town Home Meeting in the auditorium of the West Wyandotte Library, 1737 North 82nd Street, Kansas City, Kansas. The entire Wyandotte State Delegation will be acting as a panel to discuss their priorities for the 2020 session and to answer your questions. Thursday, January 9th, the Resilient Activist is developing a Business for Good course for residential interior designers to enhance the healthy home, environmental, and social justice impact of choices they make in client projects. A focus group meets 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. at Johnson County Central Resource Library, 9875 West 87th Street, Overland Park. Register at theresilientactivist.org. You are invited to this special KC Drawdown Society event, Awakening the Dreamer, Changing the Dream Symposium, Saturday, January 11th at 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. This will be in Westport, KCMO, address and directions given upon RSVP at kcdrawdownjune@gmail.com. Saturday, January 9th, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. is the KANZA Annual Retreat / Planning Meeting for all members of the KANZA Group of the Kansas Sierra Club. See more info at kansas.sierraclub.org. EarthCare Forum, January 12th, 9:40 to 10:45 a.m., First Presbyterian Church, Fireside Room, 2415 Clinton Parkway, Lawrence. Weeds in Kansas, Introduced Plants in Our Landscapes and the Kansas Noxious Weed Act, presented by Craig Freeman, Senior Scientist for Kansas Biological Survey and member of State Noxious Weed Advisory Committee. For more info, contact tjholcomb@gmail.com. Please listen to Eco Radio KC next week. These items and more can be viewed at the Eco Radio KC Facebook page. Stay tuned now for Fiesta Musicale.
Technology goes out on a limb for clean water on this current cast. Trees slow, absorb, and purify rainfall. That helps decrease runoff and stormwater pollution. Now a software tool called iTree Hydro helps city and regional planners measure the exact water benefits of tree cover versus impervious services in their community. Ted Andreni of the State University of New York College of Environmental Science and Forestry says by simulating the impacts of adding more trees,
the model will illustrate reduction in the total volume of stormwater, the slowing of the peak stormwater, and a reduction in the total amount of pollutants in the stormwater.
This provides information that communities can use to better protect their local waters. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell University's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
Cloud seeding to stop the rain? That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report.
I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Scenes of people waiting on beaches to be evacuated. Burned koalas and kangaroos. Wildfire smoke turning skies red. Many are wondering if these images are becoming the new normal.
Bushfires continue to rage in Australia, causing 24 deaths, the evacuation of more than 100,000 people, and the destruction of 2,000 homes.
Australia is in a 3-year drought, with 2019 the hottest and driest year on record. On Saturday, the temperature west of Sydney reached a record 120 degrees Fahrenheit.
The fires are taking a huge toll on wildlife. Ecologists at the University of Sydney estimate that nearly half a billion animals have been killed since September, and News Corp Australia reports that there are concerns entire species of plants and animals have been wiped out.
Koalas have been among the hardest hit. A third of the entire koala population of New South Wales has been killed in less than 4 months.
While Sunday's conditions saw cooling temperatures and calmer winds, one official told CNN that the situation could worsen in the coming days.
The Trump administration is planning to roll back protections for water by abolishing limits on how much pollution can be dumped into small streams and wetlands.
The Los Angeles Times reports that more than 80% of the streams in the Southwest will lose protections. New Mexico could be hit the hardest, with 96% of its waterways and wetlands left unprotected.
The proposed rule eliminates protections for ephemeral waterways like washes or arroyos, where water flows only occasionally. These types of streams are common in the West, and with the aridification from climate change, it's likely there will be more of these intermittent waterways.
The Obama administration had adopted a rule that would restrict the ability of farmers to use pesticides and fertilizers on land that could drain into wetlands and streams, but ranchers, farmers, and real estate developers viewed the rule as infringing on their property rights.
The current administration repealed the old rule and now plans to replace it.
Cloud seeding is usually a way of increasing rain or snowfall in dry regions. However, officials in Indonesia are using the practice to stop the rain.
In Jakarta, heavy rains since New Year's Eve have caused floods that killed more than 60 people. Almost 400,000 are staying in shelters, as more downpours are still expected. Some places of the city were 19 feet underwater, and soldiers sprayed disinfectant to stop the possible spread of disease.
In an effort to prevent more rain from hitting Jakarta, The Guardian reports that the Indonesian government began seeding clouds so they would dissipate before reaching the city.
Daniel Rosenfeld, a professor at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, told Earther that tropical clouds like the ones in Indonesia carry much water, and he worries that seeding would cause them to release more rain than they otherwise would have.
Jakarta already has the distinction of being one of the fastest sinking urban areas in the world. And as sea levels rise, the government has announced it will relocate the city.
There are great hopes that hydrogen will become a main energy source as common as gasoline.
Hydrogen is plentiful, and when it's burned, it releases no pollution. But one problem is how to produce it in a cheap and sustainable manner.
In the past, hydrogen has been captured by using expensive metals like platinum to cause a chemical splitting of the element from oxygen in water molecules.
Now, scientists from the University of New South Wales say they can produce hydrogen by using low-cost and abundant metals like iron and nickel in a process that uses much less energy.
Despite the growing market for electric vehicles, refueling a hydrogen car would be done in minutes, as opposed to the hours it takes to recharge a lithium battery in an electric car.
Forbes reports that the first zero-emission hydrogen rail project in the U.S. is being planned for San Bernardino County in Southern California. The local transportation authority will operate a commuter train on a 9-mile stretch that will run on fuel cells.
There's already a commuter rail line running on hydrogen fuel in Germany, with more planned in France. China saw the first fuel cell tram go into operation in 2015.
And finally, a court in Chile has ruled in favor of indigenous people who claimed their water supply is threatened by expansion of the lithium mining industry.
The Atacama Desert in Chile is one of the driest places on Earth. It's a huge flat area surrounded by mountains, similar to Death Valley in California.
When precipitation does fall in the desert or flows from the mountains, the water gets trapped in the basin where it eventually evaporates, leaving behind light blue salt flats.
Not surprisingly, the area has been harvested for salt, but increasingly it's being mined for lithium to meet growing demand from the electric vehicle industry for lithium-ion batteries. Currently, the Atacama produces one-third of the world's supply of the element.
Soaring lithium demand has raised concerns about whether mining can be done without harming nearby communities and the environment. Harvesting the material involves pumping huge volumes of brine into massive evaporation ponds.
Reuters reports that the court upheld a complaint by an indigenous advisory council saying that the mining company's plan was insufficient to protect the environment.
The court said its decision took into account the particular fragility of the Atacama's ecosystem and the high level of scientific uncertainty about the area's groundwater.
The court added that sensitive ecosystems must be safeguarded, even more when they include the ancestral habitat of native peoples whom the state of Chile is obligated to protect.
The mining company could face closure of its operations or revocation of its environmental permits.
That's it for this week in water, and we'll see you next time.
What's your point of view? If you've got something important to say, let us know. KKFI recently launched a new community podcast page on our website at kkfi.org. It already hosts an amazing selection of KKFI's on-air programming as podcasts. And we're not done. We want to give you a platform. Do you have a podcast? Or have you always wanted to try, but don't know how? Go to kkfi.org, select Community Podcasts, and click Apply to share your ideas and sign up for classes to learn how. That's kkfi.org/community-podcasts. And we hope to hear your ideas soon.
Eco Radio is produced by a team of collaborators, including yours truly, Craig Lubo, Teresa Wilkie, Dave Bennett, and Brent Ragsdale. Thanks to Ryan Porky for our theme music. I'm Richard Mabian, reminding you to give your feedback by contacting us at ecoradio@gmail.com or reaching out to Eco Radio KC, our Facebook